This is The Guardian.
Jeremy Hunt's budget didn't offer anything we hadn't read all week.
It is to unleash people power that we today put this country back on the path to lower taxes.
Keir Starmer, predictively enough, thought the Chancellor's speech amounted to the government's epitaph.
There we have it, the last desperate act of a party that has failed.
Meanwhile, away from all the Westminster theatre, we're still faced with the prospect of deep spending cuts after the election and the sense that no one has a plan. I'm John Harris, and you're listening to Politics Week, the UK, for The Guardian. Joining me today are Miatta Farnbulla, the Labour candidate for Peckham and former head of the New Economics Foundation, and David Gawke, the former Conservative cabinet minister who held various ministerial roles in the Treasury between 2010 and 2017. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Right. Let's talk, before we get into the sort of meat of the budget, into a very remarkable or notable aspect of what's happened over the last couple of days. A lot of what we heard today was released beforehand, simply put. Now, I'm old enough to remember 1947, when the famous Hugh Dalton, the Labour Chancellor at the time, resigned for telling a lobby correspondent some of what was in the budget. There was nothing we heard today that we hadn't heard already. Why do you think that was? What lies behind that, David, do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question, because even in my time in the Treasury, which wasn't that long ago, when it came to sort of tax announcements, you know, that was forbidden. There was quite a lot of pre-briefing on, you know, spending measures, but tax announcements, not so much. And indeed, even forecasts for the state of the public finances. So I don't know whether there was some tension between number 10 and number 11, and that resulted in some briefing getting out. I'm not sure. Some of it just seemed to be, you know, we want to get the story out over the course of several days. I mean, the one thing that was held back was the child benefit announcement, but, you know, that wasn't the biggest announcement in the world either. So I think it is curious, and, you know, it is quite a different approach to anything that we've had until very recently.
In my innocence, Miatta, I thought it might be sort of crafty expectations management, and there was something bigger coming in the budget statement,
yeah,
but there was nothing along those lines at all.
Oh, look, I think the downside of pre-leaking it all is that we're all sat there watching the whole thing waiting for the rabbit and it never came. But I guess the sort of flip side is you get two hits on the same announcement. So you get the leaked version and then you get the confirmed version. And it also probably means that most of us have to then watch it right to the end because we're waiting for that thing that never comes.
Yeah, it wasn't even a sort of mangy, distressed, near-death rabbit pulled out of the hat. There were no rabbits at all. Right, let's talk about what was in it, although very little of it surprised us. The headline policy, I guess, coming out of this budget statement, it wasn't a surprise, but Jeremy Hunt did announce the 2p cut in national insurance contributions that we were all expecting. Let's hear a bit of that.
From April the 6th, employee national insurance will be cut by another 2p from 10% to 8%. Yeah. And self-employed national insurance will be cut from 8% to 6%. Yeah. It means an additional £450 a year for the average employee, or £350 for someone self-employed.
In the wake of that announcement, Jeremy Hunt claimed that the average earner now has the lowest effective personal tax rate since 1975, leaving whether that's accurate or not aside. Do you think this cut in national insurance contributions will have any political effect? Let's not forget, he did the same cut to start with in November, which seemed to have no political effect at all. Here it comes again. So the cut has doubled from around about £450 a year to £900. So, it goes from £8 a week to £16 a week, which doesn't sound like much at all. But there must be some political reason why he's done it. David, do you think there'll be any political dividend from this? I don't, I have to say.
I suspect it'll be pretty marginal. I think it only works politically if there is a sense that the public sees this as an indication that things are getting better. So it's not so much about the benefit of lower NICS rate in itself, but a sense of, oh, we're coming through the worst, things are on the up. I think if you can convey that, that's really helpful. There is also a point about, does it present a trap for Labour, because you've got on the one side Conservatives calling for lower taxes, and are Labour essentially going to be calling for higher taxes?
Well, so no, Keir Starmer said he agreed with the cut in national insurance.
He did, but that doesn't mean that the Tories will kind of accept that and go, oh, well, we'll stop making that argument then. But no, I'm a bit sceptical about it, largely because I think there's a question as to how sustainable it is, given that I think there's quite a widespread expectation that the more money is going to have to be spent after the general election and taxes will have to go up to pay for it.
We will come on to that. Miatta, when he made that announcement, I was quite struck with the fact that he said that would have sort of quite remarkable economic effects, the cut in national insurance. He talked about creating tens of thousands of jobs and so on. Can you just explain where that sort of logic comes from?
I mean, look, it's quite hard to understand what he's driving at. I think the argument is that if you relieve the tax imposition, as he would put it, on certain people, that it incentivizes people back into work. But the issue I have with all of this is that tax cuts against the backdrop where you've increased taxes 25 times since the start of the parliament, where, by the way, he has penciled in further tax increases from next year, you then add in the economic context. I mean, this is why this budget felt completely divorced in my mind. You know, when living standards haven't moved for 15 years, when we're in recession and we have an economy that is ailing, when our public services are crumbling, actually, I expected a proper serious budget that even pretended to deal with those issues, and I don't think it did. So I think for most people, when things feel this tough, cutting national insurance just won't have an impact on them. And I think that's what we saw the last time, and that's what we'll see again.
There's another point here, David. You, as a former Treasury Minister, will know all about fiscal drag. The freezing of tax thresholds, it seems, means that for quite a few people, that £900 a year gain as a result of those reductions in national insurance will be wiped out. So Hunt is giving with one hand and taking away with the other, effectively.
Yes, that's precisely what's happening. Look, you know, compared to the baseline, compared to what we had before, this is a tax cut. But at the same time, we are seeing a freeze in the allowances and thresholds, as Miatta has said. Taxes are going up by less than was previously projected. And that's what's happening.
So is it any wonder people are cynical about politics and politicians? Really?
Yeah, although, I mean, let's be clear, a terrible phrase for a politician to say, but yeah, taxes were going to have to go up following the pandemic and everything else that was going on. So, you know, I don't think there's anybody sitting around this table or on this call who doesn't think that taxes needed to go up, but they've, you know, essentially the plan that was set out in terms of freezing thresholds, the Chancellor's decided that, in fact, he doesn't need as much extra revenue as he previously thought, and he's giving some of it back. I think, yeah, is also a fair way of presenting.
Okay, leaving aside the question of fiscal drag, the political message that Hunt wanted to convey was really, really clear at one point in particular, where he said that this was with reference to his version of Labour's moves on non-doms, that the money that generated, he said the Labour Party would fritter that away on public spending. He was all about tax cuts, right? And he made that was the clearest, most vivid point, I think, in the whole speech. Now, there's an interesting set of questions around that, in the sense that polling suggests that a majority of the public would rather any extra money was spent on public services rather than tax cuts. But that's the message that Hunt is sticking with. And I suppose that's what they think is going to be a sort of flimsy, vague dividing line in the election. Miatta, you're shaking your head out of disgust and disapproval, yeah, I would imagine.
So I just think it's really cynical. I actually think that, you know, it suggests that voters aren't as smart as they are. The idea that you can essentially try and bribe people, you know, we've increased your tax year on year, by the way, and whilst we've done that, we've allowed public services to crumble before you. We're going to give you a bung in 1 year that we've penciled in won't be sustained because we know we're going to have to increase taxes in other places. And they think that the public will just buy that. I think people are far savvier, they're smarter. I think it means that they're very cynical about politics, rightly so. But in the end, I think people wanted, like, what's the long-term plan? He used that phrase so many times. And at the end of it, I was just like, we are no wiser about how you are making people's lives better and how you will make people feel better off. And for me, the key clincher in all of this is that he talks about tax rises. Well, the OBR factored all of that in, and it still showed that household incomes will not have risen by the end of this parliament. We only reach pre-pandemic levels by 2025. I mean, that is a massive indictment on the government's record. So tink all you like, gimmick all you like, try and bribe people all you like. The fundamentals of how they feel and how things feel in their pocket is that people are not better off. And I think in the end, that's the thing that people will, you know, make political judgments on.
And do you think that Jeremy Hunt is wrong, David, to sort of read the electorate like that? The idea that they will agree with that priority, the idea that any extra money shouldn't be spent on public spending, public services, it should go on a tax cut? Or will people say, well, what about my potholed roads, my falling over council, the dire state of education in my area, et cetera, let alone the fact that my earnings haven't gone up appreciably and really 16 quid a week, which is what we're talking about, is meaningless?
Look, I don't think this budget is going to be transformative. And yes, I do think public opinion favours higher spending over lower taxes at the moment. But very often polls in the past have shown that public opinion favoured higher taxes and higher spending, and people have voted differently. So yeah,
secretly, people aren't quite as high-minded in public spirit.
I think sometimes people, when they hear people talk of higher taxes, they're thinking of higher taxes for somebody else. And you know, when it's, well, higher taxes for me, well, that's another matter. You know, I'd like the money myself, please. Thank you very much. I also think that the Conservatives' best bet is to fight on the economy. They are behind on the economy in the polls, but not as far behind as they are on some other issues. And to get the focus of the debate on the economy, you have to have a clear economic message. Now, is this the right message? Is this the one that will work? Probably not. But do they have to create, if you like, some clear blue water? They probably do.
And their calculation will be, will it not, that this relatively small tax cut will be one part of a bigger feel-good message, which will centre on inflation going down, according to the Bank of England's forecast, to 2% or lower, which, you know, although it may not remove the prospect of a big Tory defeat, it might not make it quite as thumping as it otherwise would have been. That's the one little ray of sunshine here for the government.
By the time we get to the autumn, nothing is obviously guaranteed, but there's a very good chance that the economy will feel a bit better than it does today. Then, as you say, inflation will be down, interest rates will have come down a little bit, taxes will have come down a bit. And look, this is, you know, I don't want to overstate this. This is not going to feel like a boom time, but things are going to feel a bit better.
Another striking element of Jeremy Hunt's budget speech was the amount of faith and emphasis he seemed to place in a new spurt of public sector reform. He talked about a new NHS productivity plan. He talked about things like the idea of police first responders being replaced with drones. I don't know quite how that's going to work. But this idea that magic technology was going to free up endless billions and consultants would suddenly have lots of time to do more operations and police officers would suddenly have time to arrest lots more people and all that. There was quite a lot of material in there about that, which left me cold, I have to say. I don't believe him.
Well, me neither, and partly because, you know, they've had 14 years and yet these sort of great reform fairy innovations haven't really made their way through. Look, you know, in the end, the context is really tough. And if Labour wins, the context will be really tough. And I generally believe you need a public service reform agenda, but a proper one. Without a doubt, I agree there is a big role that potentially technology can play in improving public services, but it has to be part of a public service reform agenda, which I just don't believe we've seen from the government. And to sort of chuck it in right in the sort of dying days of a government when you have no intention of actually driving it through.
I know, yeah,
it's just incredible.
David, in all your years at the Treasury, did you end up being quite sceptical and cynical about the magic reform fairy, whether it involves drones attending police incidents or not, that this is the stuff that politicians, when they're in a financial hole, tend to talk about?
No, I think that's unduly cynical. Actually, I thought this was one of the elements I rather approved of, and it certainly doesn't sort of fit with the scorched earth criticism that I think you can make of other aspects of the budget. We do need public sector reform. Miatta is absolutely right. There's much more to it than this. But if there are particular areas of investment and embracing new technology, then that is a good thing to be investing in. And, you know, presumably this has gone through a reasonably rigorous process in terms of the numbers that the Chancellor was claiming.
He was making them up when he was saying, oh, well, this will free up 34 million of this and 53,000.
I'm not quite clear to what extent the OBR was involved with it or whether there was kind of any independent sort of evaluation of it.
Can I ask you a more direct question? Do you like the idea of police first responders being replaced with drones?
Well, I think I'd want to see the details, John.
I want to see the drone, I mean, to be honest.
I mean, what are we talking? I'd like to hear the.
He's going to fly outside your house and ask you in a Stephen Hawking voice if everything is all right.
Well, it's only a matter RoboCop. It's only a matter of time.
I'm feeling better already. While we're on the subject,
well, if they turn up on time, that's a step in the right direction.
That would be a start. Yeah. I agree with you. While we're on the subject of good news. He made a move on the income threshold for child benefit, which it seems will be good news for quite a lot of people. The threshold for child benefit will go up from 50,000 to 60,000, and he claims that almost 500,000 families will gain by almost £1,300 a year. You can't be cynical about that, really.
No, and I think this is undoing something that George Osborne put in place, and getting rid of particularly that cliff edge for families that are just under the 50,000 mark. So I think this is good news, but is in the context of a very, very, very difficult picture on social security, which was barely mentioned in the entire budget. So yeah, look, great, but tough all round for lots of other people on lower incomes.
Let's just talk about things that were or could be said to be missing from this budget speech. The obvious one was the dire state of finance for councils and local services, which is arguably the biggest fiscal crisis that we face. And he said nothing, I don't think, about that at all.
No, I mean, pretty surprising. Birmingham has just signed off a really, really tough budget that requires huge amounts of cuts, council tax rises, dimming street lamps. So there is a massive crisis happening in local government. And it seems like a huge omission. For me, that's consistent with a budget which just was quite divorced from the reality out there. We were speaking in a bubble, in a very different language to the language that I think resonates with people who are seeing the realities of their day-to-day lives and everything around them.
It would have made quite a difference to the sort of heft, David, and the weight of this budget speech if Jeremy Hunt had gone some other way to directly addressing that crisis in local government finance. Because for the first time I can remember in 10 or 15 years of this being a problem, it's in the foreground in the news. Everybody's talking about it. It seems remarkable that the Chancellor didn't make any reference to it at all.
Well, they're trying to hold a line, and I know we'll talk later more about public spending in general, but unless they have got a solution to it, then they probably didn't want to talk about it, and they didn't have a solution to it because that would be quite expensive.
That's a crisp answer. On that note, we will pause momentarily. When we come back, we'll be looking at Labour's response to the budget speech and the economic problems the Labour Party may well be inheriting very, very soon.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays.
Welcome back. Keir Starmer's response to the budget was delayed because of a procedural move from the Scottish National Party, but here's a bit of what he eventually said. Not surprisingly, he criticised the government's economic record.
Food prices still 25% higher than they were 2 years ago. Yeah. Rents up 10%. Yeah. An extra £240 a month for a typical family remortgaging this year because they lost control of the economy. Yeah. They sent interest rates through the roof. They made working people pay. Yeah. They should be under no illusion. That record is how the British people will judge today's cuts. Yeah. Because the whole country can see exactly what is happening here. Yeah. They recognise a Tory con when they see it, just as they did in November. Yeah. Give with one hand, take even more with the other.
Now, we'll come on to some very big questions about what exactly Labour is going to do when it takes power in a moment. But first, an obvious question about the Labour Party and the budget. Hunt's moves on non-doms, which let's not forget was a unique selling point of the Labour Party up to this point, looked like it pulled the rug out from underneath them. Now, remind me, Miata, how much money was the non-doms move meant to raise? A few billion?
2.7 to 3 point something billion.
Okay, and what was it going to be spent on? It's easy to forget.
So extra appointments and procedures in the NHS and dentistry.
Right, so that money is now gone. So what is going to happen? The Labour Party is going to be forced into announcing more tax increases or the closing of loopholes or something similar. Is it?
Well, look, I think in the end, the core pledges to the NHS don't go away. We're committed to them. They're part of our kind of core mission. So look, the job now, I think, for the team in the Labour Party is to look at the budget in the round. And in the end, you know, we've said we'll produce a manifesto that will be fully costed. And so they're going to have to go look budget line by budget line and decide different choices that we can make in order to invest in the things that we think are priorities.
Crafty move, David, politically, arguably.
Yeah. You can see the political case for it. I mean, it does come, I would say, potentially with some economic risks. I think we need to see what the details are precisely of the new regime. I mean, they're really rushing this through in terms of announcing a reform a little bit out of the blue. Yes, Labour have been talking about it for a long time.
It's not a sort of swinging crackdown as well, just to make this clear, either. Current non-doms get 4 years clear of having to declare global income to the British tax system. So they're still going to have quite a cushy time of it.
Well, look, you want to attract people to come to this country, you know, who earn lots of money. There's always been a question of balance as to what you do, how attractive you are. You know, the hope of the government is that we'll bring more money into the country for investment.
Right, let's get into perhaps the biggest question of all, hanging over this budget and politics in general. What Jeremy Hunt said implicitly was a reminder of a fact, I would argue, that every politician knows, but not many seem to want to talk about. Both main Westminster parties say the UK has to stay within Jeremy Hunt's fiscal rules, which mean that national debt as a proportion of national income has to be falling by the fifth year of the government's current forecast. The Chancellor says that in the next Parliament, he said this today, spending on protected areas of public spending like the NHS and schools will go up by 1% a year. But if you talk to any economist, any credible economist, they will tell you that means cuts of around £20 billion a year to unprotected areas of government spending like the police, prisons, courts, and, crucially, the money the government gives to all those local councils and local public services. Now, there's a lot of talk around at the moment about that kind of programme of cuts being politically impossible, but it seems to be where we are, right? Is that your understanding, David? It's mine.
Yeah, I mean, that's the position, and you know, Labour seem to have signed up to it for the reasons that we were talking about earlier about not wanting to be seen as a high tax party. But yeah, that and look, I agree. I don't see those numbers being stuck to. I think we will end up spending more money than the government says at the moment. We've also got some things like, you know, the fuel duty freeze is supposed to come to an end in a year's time.
But this one is huge, right? Because the prospect is of George Osborne style austerity.
It's going to be one of the biggest problems Labour faces in government. You know, there are immense pressures on public spending. The current plans, I don't think, will be able to be stuck to. And so they're going to have to find the money from somewhere. And, you know, is that higher taxes? Is that more borrowing? But that, you know, that is a big issue. And I don't think the current spending plans, as I say, are really credible.
Right, Miata, you know what's going to happen next. Unless something very strange happens, you're going to be a Labour MP. You're going to be part of that government which is faced with these awful prospects. What's going to happen?
Well, look, it's going to be really tough. And I don't think anyone can underestimate the scale of the inheritance. I think everyone is really clear-sighted about that. And there are some choices that are going to have to be made within that. You know, I think the priority and everything that the sort of top team is saying is that we know it's tough. We know that we need to inject more investment into public services. Of course we do. Our route to doing that is to try to get the economy to be kickstarted to grow so that we can increase tax receipts. That puts a big onus on our capacity to do that in the first couple of years.
Yeah, but that means people having to wait amid pothole roads, bankrupt councils, services of one kind or another falling over. And if these cuts transpire, huge problems in terms of police numbers, the capacity of the courts to cope, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this is huge stuff.
I mean, it is huge stuff, and it's really difficult. And I would say that, you know, within the envelope, there are different choices that can be made. I think within the envelope, I think Labour will be looking for the ability, things like, you know, the non-dom, things like private school, where you can make ultimate different choices that will help us in those first couple
of years.
They're
not going to even begin to fill that £20 billion a year.
But the, you know, look, what's the truth? You know, people have seen their tax take increase, but they haven't seen the commensurate impact on public services. So it can't be turned around overnight, I think is the truth. I think you need 5 years in order to be able to start to fix things. But the priority has to be to increase revenue so that you can start solving some of these problems, but also to look at the opportunities for reform.
But these problems are happening now.
They are happening
now. They need money now.
Well, so I think there will basically be three steps. I think we will try and do certain things differently. For example, multi-year budgeting, devolving funding so that people can make better decisions within our resource envelope. That's the first thing. I think the second is then a big priority on increasing revenue, and that is about boosting the economy. So everything that, you know, Rachel Reeves and her team are talking about, how we're going to kickstart the economy, the new partnership with businesses, all geared towards doing that and doing it pretty quickly. And then over a 5 to 10 year period, you're then looking to fundamentally reform public services to get you to the other side. It's not easy, it's not pretty, it's not quick, but it's one hell of a mess that we're going to inherit. So, you know, there are no quick and easy solutions to this. I wish there were, but sadly there aren't.
David, there is an interesting conversation happening at the moment, well beyond the political left, about whether investment spending ought to be subject to these fiscal rules. So you can have one set of conversations about everyday revenue spending, but there's another set of conversations we should be having, arguably, about investment spending. And the reason that investment spending takes place is with a view to growing the economy, right? And the expectation of a return. So there are people like Andy Haldane, who was very high up in the Bank of England, Martin Wolf, the Financial Times columnist, you know, people you don't associate with the Labour Party and that side of politics, saying that the fiscal rules now, Jeremy Hunt's fiscal rules, and by extension, Rachel Reeves' fiscal rules, are a brake on investment. And investment is exactly what the UK economy needs. What do you think of that argument?
I think we have to be a little bit cautious here. I don't think we can ignore the aggregate level of debt. You know, governments are going to have to make some tough decisions when it comes to prioritisation. And I don't think there is, you know, it's a sustainable answer to say, well, if only we borrow more, you're going to, you know, we'll be out of the woods here and it'll pay for itself, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we have a heck of a lot of debt in this country.
But the alternative is we just carry on bumping along the bottom, that our infrastructure is terrible.
Well, I think some of it is about prioritisation. So actually, I think you need to make some quite tough decisions on elements of current spending. I would look, for example, at the pensions triple lock as an illustration of something that we could move away from. I think you have to be careful about tax cuts. And I think there are elements of reform that you absolutely have to pursue that aren't necessarily very expensive. So to be fair to the Labour Party, they've got an agenda on planning reform that actually can bring some economic benefits. I'm not yet convinced there's very much else that's coming from Labour that I think is going to be transformative. But I think Rachel Reeves is right to be cautious that the solution is not necessarily lots more borrowing, even if some of the money or a lot of the money is going to go on quite good things. Because in the end, there's only so much you can borrow before the people who lending us that money are going to start to be worried. And that is a sort of slightly unfashionable, fiscally conservative point to make. But I think Rachel Reeves is right to be cautious.
But do you worry, or do either of you worry about the political consequences of this? The reason we've had such a convulsive political time of it over the last 10 or 15 years is because people see their everyday environment deteriorating and they feel ignored and they see local services being degraded and degraded and degraded. And if you hit them with another 5 years of that, particularly after they've just been through the pandemic, which they were told in the midst of that we would build back better and we would level up, and nothing like that materialises, I worry about what that means politically. not just in terms of what it means for the Conservative and Labour parties, but we've just seen the result of the Rochdale by-election, for example. We know Reform UK are hanging around the fringes of politics looking for an opportunity. The level of sort of disillusionment among the public, if we carry on bumping along the bottom, would really help forces like that. And that worries me.
Look, I think you're completely right. You know, I don't think people can withstand what will be 15 years in which their living standards haven't budged, where they're seeing their, you know, local places, their communities eroded, and there isn't some sort of backlash on it. So that's not a pathway for us. That's not an option for us. And, you know, the job for me of an incoming Labour government is to think, yes, we can't turn it around overnight, but we've got to take people on a journey over a 10-year period to say, this is how we're going to change things for you. And I think there are, by the way, things that we will do immediately. I think with some of our measures, you know, the Green Prosperity Plan, there will be investment going into the green economy. We're making a big bet there because we think that's where the jobs of the future are going to be. But you combine that, for example, with our interventions on the New Deal for workers, a genuine living wage, fair pay agreements in those low paid sectors like social care. So there will be things that we'll be doing that will be aimed at fundamentally changing the structure of the economy. But the big part of that is how do we begin to kickstart the economy, re-gear it, and fundamentally change it so that it is working in the interest of people. That's the nature.
But I don't see how you do that, you see, without the state very often taking the lead, which involves spending money on investment. And I wonder, I'm going to ask the same question to David, because it seems to me that you've ended up, both of you, in broadly the same position, which is different from mine, in the sense that I think you do have to turn the proverbial spending taps on.
Well, no, look, I think the state does take a really muscular position. Actually, everything the Labour Party is talking about is around the state being very interventionist, whether that is in the labour market, whether that is about industrial strategy, whether that is about the way
you recut. Yeah, but your keynote policy on spending £28 billion a year on the green industrial transition is gone.
Well, it has been scaled down, that's true, but the fundamental planks of the policy, so Great British Energy, a public sector energy company that would drive forward the renewable transition, our Clean Power Plan, which would be trying to give people a stake in the community energy that's being developed. So the key parts of it, the National Wealth Fund, we've retained.
I think the question is, you know, is there anyone who's got a plan, you know, that will work? And you know, some of it is going to be really politically difficult, and it's going to require some sort of, you know, political risks.
Answer that question. Is there anyone with a plan that's going to work, as far as you can
tell? No, I don't think there is at the moment. I mean, that's the depressing point. I mean, that's the
I'd have to push back on.
Yeah, but you would say that, wouldn't you?
Well, I would say that, wouldn't I? Look, I don't think the government... I think the government are out of ideas, which is why they're nicking
ideas. No, they definitely haven't got one. But it doesn't mean the Labour Party has.
Well, I would argue that we do. The core planks of it are there. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. But there is determination to do it over a 10-year period, which is the whole point of the mission.
Okay, here's a more immediate question. When's the election going to be? There has been a huge amount of speculation in the build-up to the budget about the possibility of a May election, despite what the government has tended to say about an autumn election. I don't know where we are now, but I wonder what's your gut feeling, David, first of all.
I've always thought it was going to be an autumn election, and I'm sticking to that, notwithstanding, you're right to say, there's lots of rumours at the moment, but I'm sticking to the autumn, I think probably November the 14th.
Miata?
I think the country is sick and tired. I think we need a May election. We're certainly planning for a May election. The government are on the ground operating as if it's about being a May election, so we'll make sure that
they're spending lots of money locally, you said to me earlier. There are signs that something is going on.
Yep. Lots of money going into social media, lots of money going into print. So they're obviously mobilising, and we just need to make sure that we're ready.
Well, we'll find out in the next couple of weeks. Right, thank you for joining us, David Miata.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, make sure you subscribe to Politics Weekly UK, which is free. It's a good message in times as straitened as these. Wherever you get your podcasts, and even better, leave us a review, preferably a nice one. Do check out our new series on artificial intelligence. It's called Black Box, and each episode follows a different story. Episode 2, which has just been released, is a mind-bending story about a six-month Guardian investigation into a company called Cloth Off. It generates deepfake porn images and has been causing havoc around the world. And the team have been trying to find out who is behind it. Search and subscribe to Black Box wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes are released every Monday and Thursday. Jeremy Hunt may well be tuning in. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby. The music is by Axel Kakutier, and the executive producers are Maz Ebtahaj and Nick Holchak.
This is The Guardian.